Good morning and happy Friday to you. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an amazing show for you today. And one of the reasons I know it's so amazing is we have two returning guests who blew us away before, and we have three new guests, and we've been finding about them in the backstage. Their stories are amazing, so I know you're going to enjoy this show. And because it is Friday, TGIF, and I already found the rhythm to my shows. If you want to be a guest on the show, you definitely want to pick either a Monday show or a Friday show, because my energy on those shows is so amazing. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm doing okay. But Monday, I've been asleep for 3 days. Friday, I'm like, yes, I've done it. So today is going to be a great show. But before I go ahead and introduce today's guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to have someone join you in watching the show. So I usually ask you just to share the show, but now I need you to call a friend, text a friend, go to your neighbor, your roommate next door, tell them you want them to watch the Roundtable Talk Show with you, because this information has to be shared. It's not something that we can keep to ourselves. So grab a friend, tell a friend. The Roundtable Talk Show is live, and friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. I'm so excited to introduce our first guest. This lady, young lady, was on a previous show, and she has so much going on. She's a musician. She's an author. She has fantastic, funny stories, and we ran out of time the last time she was here. So guess what? We brought her back. Just for you, I want to introduce the beautiful, wonderful, amazing Donna Brown. Good morning, Donna. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm so happy to have a chance to come back to your show. And last time I was on your show, I focused on my nursing career, and I've had a lot of different careers in my lifetime that I wanted to talk about. So nursing was very unsatisfactory to me, so I decided to start my own business. And I've always enjoyed the field of entertainment, and I decided to start my own pantomime business. Had an opportunity to study with world famous pantomime Marcel Marceau, and studied with him for 3 summers, which was phenomenal, because as a kid, I was always watching him on television. And then all of a sudden, there I am, face to face with him, meeting him and studying with him. And I decided to, after my studies, I decided to start my own pantomime business, which I did for about 18 years. And very little business experience, if any. I just sat down with, you guys remember one of those old-fashioned phone books that you have to leaf your way through, this huge, giant phone book? Now we have everything at our fingertips. And I had one of those dial phones as well. So with a phone book and a dial phone, I actually contacted prospective clients, and that's how I started my business. I did entertainment for weddings, business events, bus rides, birthday parties, breakfast, lunches, dinners, all different types of events. And I was actually having fun. I never got a standing ovation as a nurse, but when I did my pantomime, I was getting standing ovations big time. So
I think nurses should receive standing ovations, especially during quarantine. You know, they might want to lock me up, but I really just want to walk through hospitals now like, good job. Good job. Yes, you did a good job. You deserve a standing ovation. See, Donna, you got to come back. Like, we're going to have you on plenty of shows, because you said to me, you know, and I usually don't discuss private conversations in public, but you was like, Sharifa, I want to come back because I want to discuss being an author. So I'm like, cool. We didn't get to that. I apologize. And then you're telling me you were a Panama. Like, I have all these different lives that you live. That's amazing. being a pantomime is one of those things that I always would love to do, yet wouldn't, you know, it's like a love hate, right? Because I can't stand still for more than 5 seconds. But I love those little videos of people, you know, doing things that are unexpected. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like, where did that come from? You are amazing. You are interesting. I definitely have more questions for you. But as always, hang on for a minute. I want to introduce our next guest so we can go ahead and start the conversation. I want to introduce this young lady mainly because of not only she's wonderful, but what she does. I want to introduce Brittany Lane, who and talk about her special projects as well as STEM right now. Good morning, Brittany. How are you?
Great, how are you?
I am wonderful. I love your little accent. Where are you from, Brittany?
I am from Somerville, South Carolina, but right now I am in Sumter, South Carolina with my parents.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. STEM. The reason that it was so important for me to just discuss STEM is that is an area that people are trying to get more women into and more of a focus on, and an area as far as our youth to get STEM introduced to our children at an earlier age. Brittany, tell us exactly what STEM is and why it's so important.
Okay, well, first off, STEM is an acronym and it stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And we are currently in the process of making sure we add that A to the equation. So we're moving from STEM to STEAM, and we're adding in the arts because we all know that the arts has the ability to really bring in students and to help open their creativity and their understanding of the other four. So, STEM is very important simply because technology, is moving us forward rapidly. And so, as you said, it's so important for us to introduce STEM to our children as early as possible. And it's not that hard. I have a 20-month-old, and she'll take my cell phone, and she'll, after a while, I start hearing her favorite TV shows starting because it's just innate for children now. So I think what we really need to do is use those the medium and the technology and to really draw children in and increase their understanding and make them tools of not just entertainment, but tools of education.
Why is it so important to you? Why is this a passion of yours?
Well, it's a passion of mine simply because I need our kids to be prepared to be assets to society. We need to give our kids whatever it is they need to continue moving us forward. And that looks different and unique for each individual student. And so we have to move away from this one size fits all type education and really dig into individualizing experiences for students. And it's important because we want them to be successful. And if you have the tools you need in your tool belt, then all you need to do is reach in, dig out, and pull what you need to move forward.
That's interesting. And it's so to me, I consider it to a certain extent prolific because we were going in one direction, and that direction was the STEM. Like you said, let's go to this direction. All of a sudden, uncontrollable COVID-19 global pandemic happens. And then you have something that once again has divided the education system. Because I didn't even know, but this is why I love doing a roundtable talk show, that really based on where you are in the country would determine how your school system handle this pandemic. I thought, you know, because I'm in California, I'm not trying to say we the best of the best, but we the best of the best. Okay. And in our school systems, a lot of the kids, and not all of them, you know, I'm teasing a little bit, but they were given laptops. You know, you have to do your schoolwork. And then I was talking to someone, and I'm not going to name the state because it's not really relevant, but they did not receive a laptop. They did not receive a packet. They were told, and this is a quote, go home and teach your kids something, teach them something. And I was like, what does that mean? They said, that's what they told us as parents, teach them something. They didn't give them a plan, a website to go through. They said, teach them something. So in trying to move forward with children and technology and, science, and yet you're just like, okay, I mean, and some of the things they suggested were like, learn how to do a podcast, learn a different language, but okay, how, I mean, and that's wonderful. I'm not knocking any of those things, but for them to be productive citizens, am I wrong, Brittany, or am I'm just on my soapbox this morning? I told you it's Friday. I admitted that early.
No, you are singing to the choir. So, to speak to the disparity in education across the United States in particular, that's something that those of us who have studied trends in education realized maybe about 10 years ago on a large scale. So, we have known for decades that what we are doing isn't working. And we have one of the things that stands in the way is that we don't necessarily have someone at the top that will pull everyone together onto the same page. Now, I will say we did have a national concerted effort to move forward, and we call that Common Core Curriculum. And so we got pushback from grandmas to teachers, to superintendents, all the way up the chain. And so that was a national effort to kind of bring what everyone was talking about and the way we teach children onto the same level. Now, was it successful? We won't know. And that's one of the things about education is we don't know if a technique or a strategy works 4 or 5 years. What's sad is that every 4 or 5 years we change techniques.
Yes, we keep
And so,
changing.
exactly. So we keep deepening and lengthening that disparity in education. So, we have states like California where you see different types of disparities. And then my state, South Carolina, where the disparity is depending on where you live. Are you in a city or are you in rural South Carolina? Then you have disparities along the lines of race and socioeconomic status. And so what we're seeing in STEM, however, is that it has the ability to cross over a lot of those barriers. And I think that's why there's such a large push. And we see that's where business is going. One thing we forget about education is that the point is for children to grow up, become educated, and then cross over into business. And so I think that when businesses and organizations start having more conversation about the needs for the skills that they're looking for with those in education, we will definitely start to see money flow in the right direction to fund the educational ideas and the educational system, and those disparities will close.
Excellent, excellent. Definitely have more questions for you. We're going to go ahead and continue this conversation, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest because when we talk about helping the children, then we work with them as adults and we prepare them for this world. And our next guest is someone who helps people in business, executives, with their life and their business. And to me, what was so interesting about this, I love to call everyone young ladies, but this young lady's bio was I was like, okay, she's professional, it's great. And I kind of felt like a serious tone. Like I try to read all my guests to kind of get a feel for them. And I was like, she's so serious, right? And then it got to her, she's the author of, and her book is Dude, Seriously, It's Not All About You. And I was like, oh, this lady seems cool. I have to meet her. So she is the CEO and president of the Asher Group, an executive coach, business coach, keynote speaker, and of course, author, Susan Asher. Good morning, Susan. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hello to everybody who's watching and also to your fabulous guests. I'm honored to be here, Sharifa. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You are so welcome. I love your background. Everything is so regal and beautiful. But I'm telling you, that title just blew me away because you have all these accolades and things you've done. But then when someone who can be serious and then take a lighthearted approach to life, I believe that's a gift.
I'm very funny, actually. I'm very funny, but I do come across, I know I come across to people with a high level of executive presence and decorum. Mm-hmm. And part of it is my German upbringing. I was a first in many ways. My first language was actually German. I went to kindergarten speaking German. And while my parents were bilingual, the teacher said to my mother, Gretchen, how could you let your child come to school? I wonder what Brittany thinks of this. Not being able to speak, well, within 6 weeks, forget it. It was all over. I was bilingual. So, but I do have that. And I do have that tendency to be a little bit formal. And I think part of that, it's part of my brand, but it's also because honestly, I feel the world has so dumbed down. It has so dumbed down. And Brittany, you know what I'm talking about, especially with education. Listen, you know, China and India are going to take us over. I mean, the way we view education, and I don't want to get off on your topic, but just everything, you know, everything has become so lax. Everything is okay. But to your point about my titles, someone said to me, who's also an author, she said to me, that just doesn't match you at all. I said, but it, when you read it and you hear me ranting in a funny way about, dude, really? Like, what are those sweatpants that you're wearing while we're standing in line at Dunkin' Donuts? No. Not the ones that you wore last night, the ones that you wore for the last 6 nights. And this is how we, you know, and so I am always teaching people that, you know, you talk about the word branding, right? Everybody branding, how do we brand ourselves? Your brand is what you show people every single day. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, well, now I'm getting dressed for this because this is, but it's like, wherever I go, whatever I do, however I speak, this is my brand. And that's what I try and help a lot of these executives with. So, you know, if you're a yeller or a screamer or you're a terrible listener, you have to change that brand of yourself. So a lot of what I do is really building self-awareness and stopping yourself and saying, wait, what did I just do? You know, and especially I find in the pandemic, we're really, you know, we've sort of all lost our minds, which, you know, COVID brain, and, you know, we have to really be mindful of treating people because we're also, I hate that word, that term stressed out, but we are, we don't even realize we are, we all react differently. But it's really fun to see working with teams and working with individuals, how they can really raise the bar in their own behavior to build better organizations, to build better teams. And, you know, it's just so easy. You talk about emotional intelligence, or I do a lot. What is that really? And that's what the first book is about. It's about manners, okay? It's about treating people, not only the way you want to be treated, but the way they want to be treated, especially in a multicultural society. Brittany, I'm getting you, woman. I'm getting you and you get me. So, but really, it is all about me. It's all about what I want to do and what's important to me with very little regard for other people. And you see this everywhere. And I don't want to get on my soapbox with all that stuff. But it's coming from the search business, which I was in for 25 years, and selling that business and not knowing where am I going? What am I doing? I hired a coach. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. The first thing she said to me, now, coaches are not therapists. Mm-hmm. And whenever I speak to her now, and I'm not working with her at the moment, but on and off I do, I say to her, well, actually, I do feel that way sometimes at the end of the day, that it's therapy, trying to get people, again, to raise awareness on some of their behaviors and how can, you know, it's not, when you give, you get. When you take, you get nothing. So it's really so simple, but why is it so hard? I'd love to ask you guys, that'd be a great question for your guests to answer, but why is it so hard? I don't understand. However, if you're that person who is mindful, who is understanding that people are, and we see it now, right? Aren't we all a little with the Zoom? I had a networking event that I hosted last night, my course connections. These people couldn't have been happier to be out and see each other. So while we were all busy on the internet and didn't really want to talk or meet, once we got into the Zoom thing, we're like, oh man, wouldn't we love to, it's a great tool. Don't get me wrong. It's a great platform, but boy, don't we love getting together now when we can.
Yes, absolutely. You made some excellent points. I almost had to take notes to go over all of the different points. But one of the things that you said that stood out to me is this whole COVID brain thing, right? And I think a lot of reasons, I mean, I'm not a doctor of science. I don't have a degree in anything. I just, except for the School of Hard Knocks, that's where I went to school. But what I began to see is it's hard for people to make decisions because they don't know what the future holds. And we never know, but it's like now we don't know because like for instance, California, we reopened and then we shut everything back down, you know? So we think our life is gonna be this way. And then tomorrow it's a whole different way. So it's very difficult for us to make any long-term plans to, you know, they said the most useless thing of 2020 is a schedule, like a planner. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't know what's going to happen.
Can I just interrupt you for 1 minute? So I was always, every year I order with my name on it in the gold leaf, my calendar, right? And then I started doing both. Well, I look back at I just started again this week. I said, I have to do both because I need a balance of knowing that if I miss something on one calendar, I will likely have it on the other, but it should be on both. I went from March 13th until this past Monday. There's nothing in my paper. It's all on my computer, but I just, the COVID brain, disinterested, you know, just can't, I don't know, you know, getting back to those habits that we have to, like you said, we don't know what the future holds. But we still have to be working towards something, whatever.
Yes. Yes. And then you take people, this has been my philosophy, you take humans and you put them in cages, right? Because for some people, that's what their homes have become. They're in the house 24 hours, 7 days a week. You know, and I've been telling people this, go out, have a walk, you know, yes, wear your mask, but get out, get in the sun. Sun gives you life. You know, don't just sit in the house and do nothing. And that's why those things can lead to so many other things like depression. And see now, Susan, I'm about to get on my soapbox. But before I do that, I'll come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Barry Moline. And he is the executive director of California Municipal Utilities Association, among other things. Good morning, Barry. How are you?
I'm great, Sharifa. Thank you for having me. And it's lovely to be with your amazing guests. They're really cool people. So I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I am looking forward to the conversation as well. You are amazing, pretty cool people. Barry, how do you feel being the only man in a room full of women?
Well, you know, I grew up in a house where I had two older sisters and a mom, and the dogs we had were all female. So I'm used to being bossed around by women my whole life.
And even the dog, even the dog was female.
That's right. And even in my work, I mean, I run a trade association in Sacramento that works with utilities, electric utilities and water utilities all throughout the state. And we have a very balanced staff. So I'm used to everybody telling me lots of things. And I ask lots of questions too. But I have two jobs basically. One is my full-time job as the CEO of the California Municipal Utilities Association, but I also, as you know, and many of your panelists know who write a book, I have a second job, which is I wrote a book, and then all that takes all the rest of your time in the evenings and on the weekends to talk about your book and share the ideas in the book. And mine is called Connect, How to Quickly Collaborate for Success in Business and Life, and it's something that we tend to feel like, oh yeah, I know how to talk to people, but how do you do it in a way where other people feel validated and they feel like they're engaged in the conversation? A lot of times we talk about ourselves, sort of like what I'm doing right now, but that's not the best way to engage in conversation. The best way is to find out about other people, what's going on in their lives, and to try to talk less than half the time and ask, you know, be inquisitive and find out what's going on in other people's lives. So that's sort of the key to the book, and, you know, sort of rules of the road, ideas for how to engage in conversation, and a lot of case studies of organizations that have focused on collaboration as a way to get their staff working together, and how they turned a staff or a situation where nobody was getting along and the work that they were doing was terrible to being extremely effective just by getting people to get to know each other and talk with each other.
I think that's wonderful. Why was that so important for you to write?
I was working in Florida a few years ago, and I tend to work with cities, and I got sort of parachuted in. I didn't actually parachute, but you know, but I suddenly had to work with a community in Southeast Florida, and it was a very wealthy community, and I just sort of came in as a consultant in this group, and everybody hated each other. And they couldn't get along, and they had to solve a big community problem. And they all had a lot of money. They were very wealthy, and they had enough money to, you know, to give each other the finger. You know, they could do anything that they wanted to.
What dollar amount is that? I always wonder, what is that exact dollar amount that you get to when you're like, you know what? I have enough money to give the world the finger. Yeah. 2.5 million, what? No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Barry. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, it's enough money where when you write a check, you don't notice it. You don't notice that there's a drop in your checkbook.
Okay. Well, introduce me to all of those people, right? Tell them you have to meet Sharifa Hardy.
Yeah. And after dealing with these folks for a few months, I was talking with someone over a beer, and I said, does anybody get along anywhere? Because this is crazy. And we literally started Googling and thought, oh, well, here's a community that did a neat project, and here's an organization that did something cool. And, you know, we started to find a lot of case studies of organizations that actually focused on getting together, focused on communicating, focused on collaborating, and said, you know, maybe somebody ought to write a book about this. And then we, by the end of that, you know, that third beer, we said, well, why don't we write a book about it? So the guy that I was collaborating with on it actually decided not to collaborate. He's still a great friend, but he said he had another book that he wanted to work on about homelessness. So I let him go, and I continued to work on Connect. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely rewarding because I learned things about collaborating that I had no idea. And really the number one thing is to share stories, share backstories. Mm-hmm. Because once you know a little bit about someone, a little bit about their history, you know, you sort of get their a little bit about their life story, you start to know their heart. Mm-hmm. And once you know their heart, you know the direction that they might want to go in, or what's driving them. And once you know that, when you have to get something done, it's so much easier because you know where that person's coming from. You know they're on the same wavelength. You know their vibration. But if you don't know somebody at all, and this is like being on the internet, you just see somebody that writes a comment, you know, on Facebook or LinkedIn or on some, you know, on some platform that you're on, you don't know them. So you write not any of us, but people write nasty stuff because they don't know those people. But once we know each other, you can't do that. It's really hard to do that. So getting to know people is the key to collaborating quickly and effectively.
I agree. I agree completely. And it's different tools and techniques that you can utilize. Plenty of them, I'm pretty sure you outline in the book. You know, what I do, and people don't realize how much effort and energy it takes to host the roundtable talk show. The roundtable talk show has 5 guests per day, 25 guests per week, 100 people per month that sit down together who have no idea about who the other person is. And you have to make an instant connection with each person, bring out the best in them. And that's a skill that I utilize because I want people to have an enjoyable experience as a guest on the show. But one of the things that I do is I see everyone. So I'm telling you, this is how I look at you when I see you, is that little kid on their first day of kindergarten, right? No matter who you are, you walk into that room and we all just want to be accepted. We want to find our little group. We want to play. We want the other little kids to play with us. So I just try to bring out something from each person so we can make that instant connection so we all can get along and have a fabulous show. And I really think that's one of the reasons people walk away from the show and like, I got to do this again. That was fun. Thank you, Barry. We're definitely going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. This is her third time being on this show. I was a guest on her show. This lady is amazing. The only word I have been able to use to describe her is magic. She's just magical, magical, magical. She is so amazing. And when you see, you'll see why I always introduce her last, because she's going to show you some of her magic right now. But aside from being magical, she is also the host of her own show, which she's going to talk a little bit about. She has over 2.4 million listeners that tune in to hear her voice, her view, and about business. I want to go ahead and introduce the magical Sunita Shannon. Good morning, Sunita. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Freedom Friday. We made it to the weekend, guys. This is your girl, Queen Sunny Honey from CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. As you know, it's morning time for you over there. I'm over here on the other side of the world, and it is sunset. So if you notice, it's a little darker compared to your side of the world. It's your international girl still connecting with you today. I just want to thank you, Sharifa, for allowing me to come onto your platform. One of the most important things is the cohesiveness for us to come together and to have these conversations. So you got a chance to just introduce me to phenomenal people each and every week. One of the connecting factors I see today is behavior modification. When the wonderful Donna came forth, just to know that pantomime, it reminded me of a quote of like, silence cannot be misquoted. It gives us a chance to be quiet and look at the art form and really pay attention in order to get the message. And that's the message in there for everybody else that's living through COVID right now. Then when you brought forth Brittany, STEM education and artificial intelligence is taking over the world. People are going to be without jobs if they haven't already been laid off. Instead of being proactive, let's try to be, instead of being reactive, let's be proactive and get our children involved in these STEAM and STEM programs. Artificial intelligence is here. There's no need to resist. And I really appreciate Brittany bringing forth the conversation because we are going to have our kids right back at home for this academic year of virtual learning. And it's important for parents to be able to see that connection in order to know what's available tomorrow. When Ms. Susan came in and as an amazing author and a boss, I love that human behavior modification aspect that she brings to the world. Acknowledging the things like, dude, really? I love it. To bring attention to the very behaviors that are not really working for us. If you keep repeating the same thing over and over, you know that's insanity. So Ms. Susan has just brought a sense of peace and clarity. And Barry, behavior modification is key. When you're able to sit in a room with the 1%, the haves, and you recognize that that line of communication has to occur, people have to see the human connection and be sensitive. I applaud each and every one of you for just doing your part for behavior modification. Ms. Sharifa, when you bring us forth every single day, people get an opportunity. If you are a person who hasn't had any inspiration, every person on this platform is here to inspire you. This is just Queen Sunny Honey on my own little soapbox. Thank you.
I love you. Wasn't that magical? Now you can't tell me that was not Susan. Come on, work with me. I know we had to love that.
Totally, totally. It's funny. And Barry, also, you said something, you know, when you said about listening, and I always say, I think I have it in my book, actually, you know, God gave us two ears and one mouth so that we would listen twice as much as we talk, you know, really like simple, simple things. But you know, I appreciate you, Sunita, recognizing that we're really all like Donna doing her thing with pantomime. We have to share these things with the world to make the world a better place. And, you know, I don't want to go there in terms, but there's so much, you know, strife and grief and violence and why can't we love each other more, you know, and care about each other more? and find ways to, like Barry said, to connect, not to disconnect. So,
I agree. Donna, what are you thinking over there? I've got to give you enough time today.
Yes. Connecting with people is kind of twofold. When I would do my pantomime performances, I would connect with people without even saying a word. And the messages that I was conveying with my face, with my hands, my body, was instantly understood by my audiences, be they children or adults or elderly people. That was really wonderful. And then the other component is too, finally finding my voice through the book that I wrote. And the name of the book is Finding Medusa. And this is the story of, it's a musical story because I'm also a musician. And the band that we created back in the dinosaur age, back in the early 70s, we created this rock music, this original rock music. And that was discovered 40 years later through a 45 at a record convention. I mean, All of a sudden, this producer calls me and says, wow, I found your 45 at a record convention, and I want to make an album of this 45. And lo and behold, the album was released a year later, received worldwide acclaim. So that's why I decided to write this story about just a plain, ordinary person. This music is very powerful, very powerful. Talk about communication. Music communicates volumes. And we received worldwide acclaim for this music. And that's why I decided to write this story of Finding Medusa, which actually was about really finding my own authenticity as a musician and all the different roles that I played in my life. I've reconnected with my musical roots. And that's why I decided to stop talking about writing a book and actually write the book.
I wanted to say one thing that Donna just made me think about that I didn't mention, and especially as a pantomime and how you had people connect with you, you know, virtually without any speaking, is the body language that we use and building more awareness in people about your body language when you're speaking to people and in being able to engage them with your body language, with looking at them, with whatever it is that we're doing. That's really important too. And so much of body language is silent, right? It's are you leaning in? Are you nodding your head? Are you getting it? And so that's something, again, to be mindful of, right? If let's say you're the boss or whatever, looking for those cues, and that's part of emotional intelligence, looking for those cues. You know, Barry, is that person in the room in this Florida, you know, what are they doing? You know, are they sitting like this, you know, with their hands up? I mean, there's so much that we can learn from people, even when they walk into a room, on what their body language conveys. So it's the mind-body connection as well. So that just, I thought of that, Donna, when you were, you know, talking about your, how you connected with the audience, you know, through pantomime.
Yeah. I think that was interesting. But for some people, let me ask you this, Susan. I always believe, no matter what anybody says, there are levels to life. Kind of what Barry was referring to.
I didn't hear you. There are
levels to life, right? So like Barry was referring to, he was having this experience with the upper echelon, right? So you have wealthier, the haves, the 1%, as Sunita said. But then when you go from whatever level you're on to maybe all of a sudden you're around more successful people. Sometimes we wonder, okay, how then should my body language, you know, maybe it needs to change. What should I do to be more professional? What should I do to display that I'm confident? What should I do to reflect, you know, that I'm comfortable in my own skin at whatever that level is? Do you understand that question, Susan? Or would you like me to rephrase?
Can you rephrase? What are you asking me? What should we
do? I get to the nitty gritty. Basically, the imposter syndrome, right? I'm pretty sure you're familiar with it, right?
Yes,
a lot of people.
Many times. You get where I am. When I was 25 and I walked, I'll never forget, 25, walking into like whatever, a CEO of some bank. And he definitely only brought me in there because I was a 25-year-old chickie back in the day. In his mind, I know that. He was not giving me any business. But anyway, yeah, so go ahead. Go ahead. No, just ask me the question one more time. Sorry, because I keep getting off topic. I apologize. COVID.
It's okay, because I'm trying to get
you. Being an imposter, are you asking me, is that okay? Or how do you do that? Or what is that what you're asking?
No, my question is, often when we go take a different journey, right? All of a sudden, maybe I was a small business owner. I just hit that level of $5 million in revenue. So mm-hmm. now I'm invited to every country club, every upper echelon place to be. I'm now having different speaking engagements. I may feel that I have imposter syndrome. What are some of the things that I can do or need to know to get out of feeling and maybe broadcasting that I feel like I'm an imposter, to actually owning that, to actually being confident in that and sitting with that?
Well, we have to understand, no matter how much money you have, all right, that's not the golden be all and end all. Everybody has problems. Everybody has problems, you know. And again, you know, like my grandfather always said, put your cross in the box there, and then you'll see that you're going to take your cross that you're bearing out again, and you'd rather take your own problems. But in terms of, and I went through some of that, you know, as my business grew. And I think a lot of it goes back to branding, right? So this is why, who is a mentor to you? Who is a sponsor to you within your organization, or it could be someone outside of your organization? Who do you look up to? Why do you look up to them? Look at them. Generally speaking, they do have an image that you're looking to be like. And by the way, if you're, you know, working in a Facebook or in a Google, that's a different look than if you're working at, you know, a Johnson & Johnson or a Boeing, mm-hmm. or if you're working as an entrepreneur. But I think, you know, so much of it is that we learn through experience. And when you put yourself out there, you know, looking around and you know, building confidence. And I do a lot of that, especially I do a lot of that with women. I hate to say that we're still talking about this 40 years after, you know, we burned our bras and everything. But I think that so much of it is emulating the people that you admire and aspire to be, finding those people, making them a mentor. You know, hey, guess what? And this is not a pitch. Maybe you need a coach. Maybe mm-hmm. you need someone that's going to help you, that's going to push you, that says, you know, hey, Brittany, that's great. What you did there is great. Or Brittany, really, you didn't get that. They said you're getting a bonus and you're not getting it. You need to go back and ask why, or you need to have that in writing. These are all things that I have lived through with people. So when you go to this country club for the first time, you know, you make sure that you sort of fit in, right? So what would you wear? What would you do? How would you shake hands when we used to do that? And, it's like, and Barry, to Barry's point, you know, it's funny, and then I want somebody else to talk, but I was at years ago, I had this blue-haired doyenne sitting next to me at this very formal luncheon, and everybody was talking, and all the ladies who lunched were all dressed up, and she turned to me, and she said, "Now, darling, what should I know about you?" And I thought that was Barry. I mean, I thought that was really, not that we have to phrase it as such, but, you know, hey, Donna, tell me about yourself. Or, you know, even you could say, what should I know about you? That opens the conversation. And that's the same thing if you're in a high level situation and you meet someone. How do you connect? You read Barry's book. He'll probably help you with that. But I think so much of it is doing a little bit of homework, knowing what your brand is, and living that brand every day. And then that builds the confidence that mm-hmm. you need to get to that next level.
Can I say something here, Shafara? Sharifa, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead.
I love that name too, though.
It's not the first time. Go ahead.
It's actually my mom's doctor's name. So I'm just.
Okay.
I have a confidence coach, and mm-hmm. her name is Regina Bonds. And so when you asked that question, it really sparked some signals for me in that a lot of times when we find ourselves in new surroundings, our physical response to that is self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. And so when we get to certain places and we work really hard and we put in the work and we're like, I've arrived, you immediately start feeling like, wait a minute, I don't belong here. because you're uncomfortable in new surroundings, and that is normal. And one of the things that she teaches us, what she calls us her confidence tribe, one of the things she teaches us is that you have to know what you want, but you also have to know that what you want wants you.
And so I love that.
We cannot forget that when we get to new places and we get into new surroundings, we can't forget the reason we wanted to get there, and realize and harness your inner power and be what it is that space needs. And so I just wanted to say that and couple it with the fact that in South Carolina, we developed the profile of a graduate. So when a student leaves high school, what do we want to present to the world and all of our graduates? And one of the things on there is in the life and career characteristics, someone that is able to connect with people and have those interpersonal skills. And so it just goes to show, to Barry's point, to Susan's point, even to Donna's point, and of course, to Queen Sunny Honey's point, that, you know, we really need to, we focus on STEM and we focus on education, but there are soft skills that are necessary for you to be successful in any arena. You have to know how to talk to people.
And really have lost that. We have really lost that. Now with people starving to come back to events, which we can't go to yet, that becomes so important. But that's really, you know, anybody, I always say, like you take an accountant or a lawyer and they're trying to pitch their business. Hey, you know what? The reason I'm going to hire you is not because you're the best accountant or the best lawyer. I'm going to hire you because I like you. That's all. Yes. I like you. I trust you. You've gained my confidence. You could be the best lawyer out there. If I don't like you, I am not going to hire you. And that goes back to anything in life. So soft skills, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, Sharifa, I want to go back to your point on imposter syndrome. I've been a CEO for more than 25 years, and I still feel at times that I don't belong here. What am I doing? And it was really significant when I was younger or a new CEO and I really didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And just was trying to pay attention to everybody around me, a lot of examples of other heads of organizations and trying to mimic what they do. And just, you know, things like we're talking about, you know, their posture, how they hold themselves, what they say, what they don't say. And over time, just more experience, more opportunities to mimic that behavior and, you know, be in a room and try to do it and find, oh, well, you know, people are responding to that. Okay. But it's still every time, you know, as Brittany was talking about, you get into this new environment, it feels uncomfortable. And you know, how do you cope? Well, you have to go back to, well, last time I was in a new environment, it turned out okay. I still remember the first time I made a presentation, a professional presentation, and I was really nervous. And it was to about 25 people, and they were all older than me, and they all had more advanced degrees than me, but I was teaching them something that they didn't know. And it was, and they needed to work together on a project. And I had just learned the thing myself. It was a planning tool. But they were really smart. And one person came in the room as I was getting all my slides together, and he could tell that I was nervous. And he was one of the tough people. So I was especially nervous about him. And he could, like I say, he could tell I was nervous, and I was shuffling things around and sort of practicing what I was going to say. And he said, "Barry, you're among friends." And it just completely let all the air out of my anxiety balloon. And I was, I chilled. And every time I have to make a presentation or I get into an environment where I'm a little nervous, I think about that. I think, mm-hmm. you know, it's like what Brittany just said. People want you to succeed. They want to be with you. They want to be, you know, like, you know, when Donna's performing, they want her to succeed. They want to be entertained by her. They want you to do well. So, you know, just get on that same wavelength and go with it. Go with what you know. And you'd be surprised that they'll, you know, they'll go with you. They'll learn something with you. Or maybe you'll learn something from them. But even still, they want you to succeed. And having that concept of, you know, being an imposter, it never goes away. I mean, it's there for everybody. I mean, unless you're the kind of person who walks into a room and, you know, and you don't care about what other people right. think about you.
I agree.
Those people. Everyone else has just always has a little twinge of like, am I doing okay?
Thank you for saying that, Barry. As the imposter syndrome, I live overseas. So I really know what you mean when you say to step in a situation where you're the novice. My solution is this, own the room. If you go to a new company, if you're on a new project, honey, no matter where you are, own the room. I love it when you said, Barry, hey, you're amongst friends. That human connection that you brought up, Susan, of just recognizing and being sensitive to feedback from other people. It's important for us to own it. No matter where I go, whether or not someone's saying, well, you're not the phenotype for the supermodel, then I own it. I'm the phenotype for the plush model. If I'm in an arena in a whole new country and I don't speak the language, I automatically adapt to whatever the popular thing is. We can thrive in all aspects. Each and every one of us were new at some point to something. I live in the oil-rich community that has the highest currency on earth. So
say,
I understand.
Say it again, I didn't hear you. Sunita, say that again.
I live in the Middle East, highest currency on earth. None of the people, my peers, their children don't grow up to need jobs. They say things like, I'll be a trillionaire because they were born multimillionaires. So when you talk about that imposter syndrome, the end result when Queen Sunny Honey comes in and one of the children, these people have maids, drivers and everything. Don't tell their kids no about anything. Miss, I say nothing. When they go, Queen, I turn. Yes, darling, I own it. Even in the presence of someone who has amassed billions of dollars for their children and their legacy. When I'm amongst the parents, when I'm amongst the admin, everywhere I go in the world, as long as people know that whatever you bring is a sole asset to them, baby, you can own it. Because he was the consultant. They might have been great at what they did. He might have been a novice in his thing, but he was an expert in the end when he made that human connection. We're in the midst of friends.
We are in the midst of friends. I definitely love it. And I want to thank Brittany for giving me that term that I was struggling to come up with, that new environment. That's what I was trying to phrase to Susan, is that new environment, whatever it is. When you go up, you know, you upgrade to a different level. It's that new environment. I remember experiencing this for a small short period of time when I ran for Long Beach City Council, you know, because the only criteria was, okay, you have to be over 18, check, live in the 6th district, check, no felonies, check, good there, you know, and that was the extent of it, you know, but I'm going out with cameras and different people asking my opinion on how to change the world, and I was like, okay, you know. But I stepped into it. I stepped into, this is who I am. I'm the city council candidate. And I stood in that, you know, and each time I go into a new direction, it's always like, who am I to talk to all these experts every morning? But you know what? Why not me? Why not me to talk to people? Because I don't say I'm an expert on everything. I'm not an expert on everything, but I can go to the people who are experts and say, hey, Susan, how do you do that? How do they do that? How should this be done? And so I'm stepping into just simply having the ability to connect people and to bring people together. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who's taking the time to watch it in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to go ahead and start with you, Barry.
Well, I talked a lot about, you know, getting together, connecting with people and sharing stories. But one thing that I would really like for people to do in the world is to say thank you more often. And the reason why is because there's two reasons. One is when you say thank you, you're showing gratitude. Mm-hmm. And gratitude leads to happiness and it makes you feel good. But when you say thank you, that person that gets thanked is feels wonderful. It's like Christmas. It's like your birthday. They feel really good because we don't say thank you enough. There's not a lot enough thank you. And if you really want to go for it, you'll say thank you, I appreciate that. And you know, that's really icing on the cake. So I would just implore upon folks to say thank you.
Well, Barry, thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Sharifa.
You are welcome. Ms. Donna, what do you have for us today?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to Barry for telling us all to say thank you, to show our gratitude. Thank you, Sharifa, for having me on your wonderful show. Thank you to all these wonderful people that I have met, and I feel like you guys are right in my home with me. And I wanted to really express pursuing what you love to do. It doesn't have to be music. It could be just doing something that you really did and loved doing as a child or an earlier stage in your life. Pursuing what you really love doing in your life, and that brings on tremendous happiness. You share that happiness with everybody you meet, and you self-actualize. And that's what life is all about, is self-actualization, doing what you love doing.
I'm saying hi to your friend.
Hi, Sharifa.
That's my husband.
Hi, husband. How you doing? I got questions for you too, but we ran out of time. Next time on next show, we'll ask you some questions. Brittany, what do you have for us?
So, as an educator, I know that we are facing some of the most uncertain times that we will ever see, probably in my generation. And so I want to say to educators, let's hold it together. Let's fight the good fight together. Let's connect. To parents, I'm a mama myself. Please speak up. Let your voice be heard. Talk to the administration at your student's school. Talk to the superintendent of your student's district. Get involved and allow your voice to inform the decisions to be made and to the students. You guys are going to be some of the most powerful people and some of the most inspiring, because you are going to be moving through one of the largest and what I think will be one of the most defining events, but you're still going to power through. And so to everyone, thank you for allowing me to be on this show. Let's allow hope to be our principal emotion, but give yourself grace. Nobody's ever been in this spot. Nobody's ever done this before. Receive grace and give grace.
Thank you. Say thank you. Receive grace. Give grace. Beautiful, wonderful Miss Susan.
Well, I have two things. And you know, I my thing is always be brief, be brilliant, be gone. So that's why I'm going to keep.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. But I do want to say thank you and Barry for reminding us. And there's a whole chapter in Dude Seriously about that. But yes, thank you. It's so great to meet all of you. I'm going to find you on LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram. I'm going to find you. I'm going to hunt you down. But my two tips are one thing, and it kind of goes, it's a simple thing like what Barry said. And that is, please, when you meet someone, use their name. Call them by their name. It's the greatest gift you can give someone, to call them by their name, not just hi, but hi, Barry, you know, hi, Sunita, Queenie. whatever we can say. And the other thing is, another thing, and I've lived my life by this, and this is why I've gotten where I've gotten. Say what you mean and mean what you say. If I am going to say that I'm going to call you tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, I'm going to call you tomorrow morning. Why? Because that's the first way that I can build trust with you, is to show you that I said something and then I followed it up. So those two little things, the greatest gift is using someone's name and saying what you mean and meaning what you say. If the whole world could do that, I guess we'd be a better place.
I think that was brilliant. I mean, truly brilliant. And that, I mean, a lot of people don't understand, that was really the motivation in creating Twitter to begin with. His feeling was that if you don't know how to express your thoughts in 140 characters or less, you really don't know what you're talking about. You know what I mean? People come up with these long soliloquies, but let's get to the meat and the potatoes of what you're trying to say. 140 characters or less. Thank you. That was beautiful, Susan. I appreciate you. Thank Go you ahead and take this on out, Queen Sunita.
This is your girl, Queen Sunny Honey, and it has been a wonderful opportunity to come to you. So today, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you so much, Ms. Sharifa, for having us. And pretty much everyone, remember what my father told me. What is the most valuable thing a person can give you? Their time. Thank you for your time today, and limitless blessings to you and yours.
Thank you. Beautiful. Thank you. I appreciate you. Happy Friday. It is a wonderful show. I had such a great time. We all connected. We all came together. We learned. We talked. We shared. It was a beautiful way to close out a week. I am so thankful for all of you for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I definitely appreciate you. And I appreciate everyone who tuned in to watch the show live. If you haven't shared the show already, please go ahead and share the show. Even if you are watching this show 20 days later after the show, or 2 years later, doesn't matter. You can still go ahead and share this show, because the information will still be as valid then as it is now. And if you watch the show, don't just watch. Visit our guest website, follow them on social media, send them a message, send them a tweet. And when you contact them, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. If you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks.